I'm going to try without the mic. Is that everybody hear me?
Yes.
All right. If my voice starts going, I'll pick up the mic. I was singing to my boys last night, and my voice started fading, and I was worried that it was going to be gone this morning, but it seems to be back. So if it goes, we'll switch to the mic.
Let's have it off then. Looks like so.
I think you did. All right. Good morning. Today we're talking about what's new about the new church. And if you did your pre-reading, this passage should be familiar. This is one of the memorable relations that Swedenborg tells in the next world. I was once in my spirit taken up to the angelic heaven and into one of its societies, and some of the wise men there then came to me and said, "What news do you have from earth?" "This," I said, "that the Lord has revealed secrets which surpass in excellence all the secrets previously revealed from the inception of the church." Now, that's a thrilling start. This is the secrets, the revelation that's the best thing that has happened to this world since the beginning of the Christian church. This is excellent stuff. Am I in your way? Okay. And then it goes on, and basically this is a list passage, and I've collated the list. The spiritual sense of the word, correspondences, circumstances of life after death, nature of the world of spirits, spiritual son, 3 degrees of life, and then a number of other things. And then he goes on and lists a number of other things. The last judgment, the Lord is the God of heaven and earth, and the Trinity is in him, the new church and the doctrines of that new church, the holiness of the sacred scripture, the apocalypse, planets and earths and the universe, and accounts from the spiritual world. So all of this is listed in one passage, and it gives you a little taste of some of these, but some of these are just like, oh yeah, and this is new. It doesn't really talk anything about it. So what I've done today is this is a cover the waterfront presentation. We're going to say something about every single one of those. So that's like 13 things, I think. We're going to fly. We're going to go quickly. And what we are going to look at is why these revelations matter. We're not going to talk about the details of any of these, just what the Lord says or something about why these matter. And so what I hope to do today is to whet your appetite, to get you excited or to re-excite you about how awesome what we have is, how amazing it is, how much people in this world need this, and how much it can help people who are really interested in the truth about spiritual life. So I hope that you're more excited. I hope you're more confident about why these ideas matter. I hope you maybe get interested in something that you hadn't really thought about and maybe decide to pick up a book and read about it because this idea is really cool or really useful. And I hope you appreciate all that the Lord is offering us. This is a spiritual wealth. This is like gold spiritually. And can we hold it that way? This stuff is so good. And just knowing a little bit about the why will give us that flavor, that affection for these teachings. So that's my goal. So I have a lot of slides. We're going to try to move quickly. A lot of the slides are passages that are, you know, broken because of the size of the thing. So the first one he talked about was the spiritual sense. Okay, just want to say, if you do have questions, I don't want to just be me talking all the time, but we have a lot of ground to cover. So if you have a question about a specific thing, feel free. We'll stop. We'll talk quickly. But we're not going to spend a long time on anything. So the first one, the spiritual sense of the word. And this one is the one that has the most slides about it because it just has so much good about what it is. A.E. 950, Apocalypse Explained, there are many reasons why the spiritual sense of the word is now disclosed. One is that the churches in the Christian world have falsified all the sense of the letter of the word, and this even to the destruction of the divine truths in heaven, whereby heaven is closed. So the spiritual sense has been revealed because people don't get it. They've taken the word and read it in such a way that there's nothing true left in it. The second reason is that the falsities that have inundated the church and have devastated it cannot be dissipated except by genuine truths in the word opened. So there's this loss of something, and then, look, it can be restored. People just have to know what the word is really about. Genuine truth. The third reason is that the new church, meant by the Holy Jerusalem in the Apocalypse, is conjoined with heaven by means of the divine truths of the word, contained in its spiritual sense. For the word is conjunction, but it is then conjunction when a man perceives the word in the same way as the angels do. So the word conjoins us with heaven. This concrete idea is yoked together. We get to be yoked together with heaven in the way we live, the way we think, who we are, if we think about the word the same way the angels do. And so a bunch of the rest of these passages are kind of trying to bring that last bit to life. It says, conjunction by means of the correspondences of the spiritual sense of the word with its natural sense is unknown to man. If this sense were known to man, and if man, in reading the word, were to think in accordance with some knowledge of it, you don't have to know everything, if you read it with some knowledge of it, he would come into interior wisdom and would be still more conjoined with heaven, since by this means he would enter into ideas like the ideas of angels. Wow. Interior wisdom. Conjunction with heaven. Reading it with just some knowledge of the correspondence of spiritual things that are present in the Word. And now we're going to use the spiritual sense to define the spiritual sense or talk about why it's important. You know, bad definition practice, but whatever. Then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. So this is from Revelation 19. I think our recitation is from the same number, right? Matthew? 21. Okay, so this is before that. Revelation 19 is the rider on the white horse comes. There's a whole army with him. This is the second coming of the Lord in the Bible. This is when he comes, and he comes with an army, and he defeats the dragon. This is what this means. Or this is the context of that story in Revelation. This symbolizes the spiritual sense of the word revealed by the Lord, and the deeper meaning of the word thereby disclosed, which is the coming of the Lord. So knowing about the spiritual sense is the coming of the Lord. Not just we get to be conjoined with heaven, we get to experience the Lord's second coming. Seeing heaven open symbolizes a revelation by the Lord and a disclosure then. This is the coming of the Lord, because that sense makes it clearly apparent that the Lord embodies the word, and that the word deals with him alone, and that he is the God of heaven and earth, and the new church originates from him. Get to be joined with heaven, get to experience the second coming of the Lord. And then this one is really cool. This is sort of an addition to the second coming. In order that the Lord could be constantly present with me, so this is Swedenborg speaking, he has revealed to me the spiritual sense of the word, in which divine truth is illuminated by its own light. And in this, he is continually present. For it is through the spiritual sense and in no other way that he is present in the word. And his presence passes, I don't know why that A is there, through the light shed by the spiritual sense and into the shadow which covers the literal sense. The Lord is continually present in the word when read through a spiritual light. So it's not just that we get to experience the second coming, but we get to have his continual presence with us. This stuff is powerful. You know, this is why this is number one in Swedenborg's list of what has now been revealed. This is why I'm spending a little more time on it. There is so much in the spiritual sense. And what we get to know by it and experience by it and have access to and be joined with and learn from and be present with, all from the spiritual sense of the word. All right, so one of the things I just want to point out about this is when the writings talk about the word, often what they mean is this book. The literal sense of the word. And I just want to hold this up in front of you and say, this book. You know, I know a lot of New Church people who just read the writings. And the writings, this is where this all stuff comes from. But there's so much power in just the stories of the Word and being able to get glimpses of the spiritual light. And it's this book that it's talking about, as far as I understand, that he is continually present in when you read it. I don't want to dismiss the writings. You need to be reading that, because this is how you get access to all this stuff too. You need to understand it correctly. But this book is where all that stuff is taking place. And I just want to point out that's what it's talking about. So, spiritual sense of the word. I think we're done, number one. That's the one. You're in for a long lecture, right? Number two, correspondences. Without a perception of what correspondence is, it is impossible for anything to be known clearly about the spiritual word, or of its influx into the natural world, or even of what the spiritual is in relation to the natural, or anything with clearness about the spirit of man, which is called the soul, and of its operation into the body, or yet the state of life after death. How much cannot be known without the idea of correspondences? It is necessary, therefore, to explain what correspondence is and what its nature. You can't get any of these things about spiritual life and what, you know, who you are as a spirit and how that relates to heaven. All this stuff is dependent upon correspondences or a knowledge of them. And this is just a nice little succinct one. Without knowing about correspondence of physical things with spiritual things, no one can know the functions and benefits of Holy Supper. It also talks about it in terms of baptism, but this was nice and clean. You can't know why Holy Supper is so holy if you don't understand correspondences. All right, number three, life after death. So we're just going to read through the first number in heaven and hell, because he's telling you why this book's important. The arcana, or secrets, now revealed in the following pages treat of heaven and hell, and at the same time of man's life after death. The man of this church at this day knows scarcely anything about heaven and hell or about life after death, although they are all set forth and described in the Word. Lest, therefore, such a negative attitude which prevails, especially with those who have much worldly wisdom, should also infect and corrupt the simple in heart and the simple in faith, it has been granted to me to associate with angels and to talk with them as man with man. Also to see the things in heaven as well as in the hells, and this for 13 years. So did you catch that? One of the reasons is to prevent a negative attitude. Now therefore, what I have seen and heard, I am permitted to describe these things in the hope that thus ignorance may be enlightened and unbelief dispelled. Such immediate revelation is now made because that is what is meant by the coming of the Lord. So dispel a negative attitude to enlighten ignorance and unbelief dispelled. People need to know about life after death, what it is, how it happens, what happens in it, that it happens, that you do live after death. And there's much doubt and disbelief and ignorance about it in the world this day, which is why it's been revealed. And this revelation is the second coming. So now, the nature of heaven and hell. This isn't really a big encapsulating thing, but it's just little flavors of truths that you need to know. Among the things people need to know about is also the angelic heaven. For anyone who has any religion thinks about it and wishes to go there. Yet heaven is granted only to those who know the way to it and walk in that way. This way can be known to some extent too from knowing the character of those who constitute heaven, and from knowing that no one becomes an angel or comes into heaven except one who brings an angelic character with him from the world. You got work to do in this life. You got to build an angelic character so that you can take it with you into the next world. And you got to know what that angelic character is. So, it's been revealed so that you can become at least something of an angel in this world. This is one of the beautiful, powerful, challenging passages in the new church. Be it further known that all evil flows in from hell and all good through heaven from the Lord. But the reason why evil is appropriated to man is that he believes and persuades himself that he thinks and does it from himself, and in this way makes it his own. If he believed, as is really the case, then evil would not be appropriated to him, but good from the Lord would be appropriated to him. For the moment that evil flows in, he would reflect that it was from the evil spirits with him. And as soon as he thought this, the angels would avert it and reject it. For the influx of the angels is into what man knows and believes, but not into what he does not know and does not believe. For the influx is not fixed anywhere except where there is something belonging to man. So if you know what heaven is like, and you know what hell is like, you can have the thoughts and feelings that are coming into you going, oh, that one's not good. That's from hell. And then the angels get to work, helping you turn away from it, to reject it and to avert it and to lessen its impact on you. So if you know what heaven is like and you know what hell is like, you can start to be free to choose heaven and to let go of hell in your life. So by knowing it, you get to have a better life. But you have to know what it's like, because heaven can only flow into what you know. So you have to know about heaven and hell. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can wait. You know, there's something in me that's making that easier for it to flow in, but it's still not coming from me. I still get a choice. All right, so that's the nature of heaven and hell. Number five, the spiritual son. And this isn't one I would have put on this list. You know, what's new about the new church? Oh, there's this idea that there's a spiritual son, right? I'm sure you all had that one on your list, right? It is generally recognized that there is a vital warmth in humans and in all animals, but people do not know where it comes from. People discuss it on the basis of conjecture. So, if they do not know anything about the way matter is responsive to the spirit, correspondences, they identify the warmth of the sun as its source, some focusing on the activity of the particles, and some on life itself. However, since these last do not know what life is, they are just substituting one word for another. There's something living in people. Well, it's these particles and their action and their activity. Or there's this life thing that exists and the sun somehow created it and like it arose. And you know, you've heard the arguments, you've heard the stories. However, once people realize that there is a relationship of responsiveness between love and its feelings on the one hand, and the heart and its derivative vessels on the other, they can know that love is the source of that vital warmth. Love radiates as warmth from the spiritual sun where the Lord is, and is felt as warmth by the angels. This spiritual warmth, which essentially is love, is what flows into the heart and its blood by correspondences and instills both its warmth and its life. Our source of life is from the spiritual sun. Who knew? Obviously no one without revelation. All right, discrete degrees. And this one goes along with internal sense and correspondences and a whole bunch of other ones. One who does not acquire for himself a perception of these degrees cannot possibly discern the distinction of the heavens. There are multiple heavens and there's a relationship between those. Nor between the interior and exterior faculties of the man. You have an inner person and an outer person. They're related. How does that work? Nor the distinction between the spiritual and the natural world. There's a spiritual world, natural world. How do those things relate? Nor between the spirit of man and his body. So neither can he understand the nature and source of correspondences and representations, nor what influx is. So all of correspondences, all the spiritual sense, all that stuff, heaven and hell and man's relation to his body, all it depends on this idea of discrete degrees. Next passage on this. I am not aware that anything has been known hitherto about discrete degrees or degrees of height, only continuous degrees or degrees of breadth. So things work on this continuum of shade to light, but then not a difference of one continuous or discrete. Yet nothing of the real truth about causes can be known without a knowledge of degrees of both kinds. He can't understand why things happen without understanding this process. It is the object of this little work to uncover causes that effects may be seen from them, and thus the darkness may be dispelled in which the man of the church is in respect to God and the Lord, and in respect to divine things which are called spiritual things. You have to understand discrete degrees to get what this is all about. All right, so that's the first six he talks about, and then the more things. So now we've got seven more things. So 7a, the last judgment. It was shown above that the last judgment does not take place on earth, but in the spiritual world, where all are gathered together who have lived since the beginning of creation. This being so, no human being could possibly be aware when the last judgment took place. For everyone expects it to happen on the earth, with everything in the visible sky and on the earth being changed at the same time and affecting human beings on earth. Without revelation, you just wouldn't even know it happened. So to prevent people in the church living with the belief out of ignorance, and those who think about the last judgment perpetually waiting for it, which would eventually result in people disbelieving what the literal sense of the word says about it, and to prevent more people losing their faith in the word, I have been allowed to see with my own eyes that the last judgment has now taken place. Without knowing that the last judgment took place, people are just going to stop believing in the word. You know what he says in Matthew 24 about the second coming, what he says in all of the book of Apocalypse, they're just going to stop believing it. So it's been revealed. People need to know this if they're going to understand what these parts of the Bible are about, parts of the word are about. There are many reasons why the last judgment takes place when a church comes to an end. The primary one is that the equilibrium between heaven and hell then begins to be destroyed, and together with it, man's true freedom. For when man's freedom is destroyed, he can no longer be saved. For then, his loss of freedom carries him into hell, and he cannot be brought in freedom to heaven, and no one can be reformed without freedom. And a person's freedom is wholly dispelled upon the equilibrium between heaven and hell. Wholly dependent upon the equilibrium between heaven and hell. So this one is just not so much a why, but what I want to point out is why this matters. The Lord has done this for you. That's one of the reasons we praise and thank and love the Lord, is because he does works that we cannot do. Could you imagine trying to sort out all of heaven and hell, as hell is attacking heaven and stepping into that space and taking away people's freedom? If you are responsible for sorting that out while you're here on this world, good luck. The last judgment took place so the Lord could fix this for you. And that's important to know for your relationship with him. All right, about the Lord. So we've heard this passage today, so we're going to fly through this one. The new church is the crown of all churches, which has hitherto been on the earth, because it will worship one visible God, in whom is the invisible God, as a soul in the body. Only thus can there be conjunction with God and man, because man is natural, and consequently thinks naturally. Well, conjunction must be in thought, and so in affection. And this takes place when a man thinks of God as man. Conjunction with an invisible God is like the eye's grasp of the universe, whose end is beyond its sight, or like vision in the midst of ocean, which falls only into air and water and is completely fades away. But conjunction with a visible God is like seeing a man in the air or on the water, stretching forth his hands and inviting all to his arms. For all conjunction of God with man must also be a reciprocal conjunction of man with God. And reciprocation on man's part is only possible with a visible God. People only have access to God if they think about him in the form of our Lord Jesus Christ. Without that, there's no reciprocation. There's no conjunction. There's no real partnership. There's no yoking together in life and understanding and in wisdom. And if religion is anything, it's about the relationship of people and God. So this is number three of the more about the new church. And I've got a couple slides on this one. So long as people live in the world, he cannot see what the Lord's church on earth is like, much less how it has turned from good to evil in the course of time. This is because a person takes an external view while he lives in the world and can only see what is plain to his natural man. What a church is like from a spiritual point of view, that is, from the point of view of its internals, cannot be seen on the earth, but in heaven. It can be seen as bright daylight, since the angels think spiritually and also see spiritually, so that they see only what is spiritual. The state of the former church, the state of the new church, none of this can be seen from this point in the world, so it has to be by revelation that people know about the states of the church, the former and the new. The purpose of this coming of the Lord, his second coming, is to separate the evil from the good, to save those both past and present who believe in him, and to form them into a new angelic heaven and a new church on earth. If he did not do this, no flesh would be saved. The Lord's second coming has two purposes: to form the angelic heaven out of the people who believe on him, to help clarify their thinking about it, and to form a new church on earth. So all that stuff we read about, the internal sense of the word, the Lord's presence, his second coming in that, and the his revelation of spiritual things, which is his second coming in, from heaven and hell one, is there to form a new church. So this is one of those famous new church passages. This second coming of the Lord is effected by means of a man to whom the Lord has manifest himself in person. This is Swedenborg's claim. I got to meet the Lord Jesus Christ, and whom he has filled with his spirit, that he may teach the doctrines of the new church from the Lord by means of the word. That the Lord manifested himself before me, his servant, and sent me to this office, that he afterwards opened the eyes of my spirit and thus introduced me into the spiritual world and granted me to see the heavens and the hells, to talk with angels and spirits, and this now continuously for several years. I affirm in truth, as also from the first day of that call, I have not received anything whatever pertaining to the doctrines of that church from any angel, but from the Lord alone, while I read the word. So this is the key claim passage. This is what our faith is based on, is that Swedenborg did this, that he saw this, that he experienced this. So that's some stuff about the new church and what it is and sort of the foundation of our faith. The holiness of the sacred scripture, number 7D. It is asserted in the church that the word is holy, and this because Jehovah God spoke it. However, as its holiness is not apparent from the letter alone, like everything, if you just look with our external eyes on things, you can't see what's really going on, you can't understand causes. Therefore, he who once has doubts about its holiness on that account, when he afterwards read the word, confirms his doubts by many things in it. So you just read the word according to the literal sense, what it actually says in the words, you're going to eventually doubt that the word has anything holy in it. How can that be holy? How does this people coming and destroying other people, what does that have to do with any kind of holiness? You know, it's a common question ministers get. If you just read it, you're not going to understand it. Therefore, lest such thoughts should flow into the minds of many and ultimately prevail, and thereby conjunction of the Lord with the church where the word is should perish, it has pleased the Lord now to reveal its spiritual sense in order that it may be known where in the word that holiness lies concealed. You got to understand all those things that he was talking about before and all those revelations that have to take place for people to get it. The holiness is in its spiritual sense. But the reason the word is in its fullness, holiness, and power in the literal meaning is that the two prior or deeper meanings are called spiritual and heavenly are together in the earthly meaning, which is the literal meaning. So even though the holiness and power exists from the spiritual sense, it's in its fullness and power when we read the literal sense. The literal sense is holy. It's the foundation of all the holiness. It rests on that literal sense. The stories of the Word, the words of the Lord Jesus Christ, that's where the holiness exists in it, but because of those deeper things that are present in it. And this is just the extent of that holiness. The style of the word is such that there is holiness in every sentence and in every word. Indeed, in some places, in the very letters. And consequently, the word conjoins man with the Lord and opens heaven. All right, the apocalypse. All things predicted in the apocalypse are divinely inspired. And that the apocalypse is a prophetic book of the word. For if this were not revealed to the world, and at the same time the internal sense, which is in each expression there, as in each expression of the prophets in the Old Testament, that book might be rejected on account of it not being understood, which would produce such incredulity, that the things there said would not be held worthy of belief, nor that any such last judgment would come, in which unbelief, those of Babylon would confirm themselves more than others. Unless this should be, it pleased the Lord to make me an eyewitness. People would doubt this book, in particular, the book of the Apocalypse, or the book of Revelation, as it's called in our Bible, the English version. Sorry. So, there's a doubt that people would have about this book. And if I don't know if you know this, but there's a reason it's the last book in the Bible. Luther reorganized the books of the Bible as we have them, and therefore the books of the Word. And he put the Revelation last because he kind of wasn't sure that it should be there. And so from the beginning of the Reformed Church, there's been a doubt about it. And this passage says that Babylon would benefit most from getting it, which is, as I understand it, his term for those who, in the Catholic Church, who have a love of dominion. It's very specific about it, what he means by Babylon. So the earths and the universe, this is one we often like to shove into the corner and pretend doesn't exist, but it's one of the things that's revealed, so we'll talk about it. Moreover, when I have spoken with spirits, I have said that man may believe that the universe, there are more earths than one. And from this, that the starry heaven is so immense, and the stars therein are so innumerable, each of which is in its place, or in the world, is a sun, and like our sun, in various magnitudes. Whoever duly considers concludes that so immense a whole must needs be a means to an end, which is the ultimate of creation, which end is the kingdom of heaven, wherein the divine things may dwell with angels and men. For the visible universe, or the heaven, resplendent with stars so innumerable, which are so many suns, is only a means for the existence of earths and of men upon them, of whom may be formed a heavenly kingdom. From these things a rational man must needs be led to conceive that so immense a means, adapted to so great an end, was not constituted for a race of men, or for a heaven thence derived from one earth only. For what would this be to the divine, which is infinite, and to which thousands, yea, tens of thousands of earth, all full of inhabitants, would be small and scarcely anything? The reason he's revealed it is to affirm that the Lord has such a great love that he wants lots and lots of different kinds of people to populate his heaven. I think it's a demonstration of the Lord's love. And another one is people begin to doubt that there are all these other heavens because, you know, why would Jesus Christ come to this one? And what about all those other heavens? So this is what he says about it. There are many reasons concerning which I have been informed from heaven, why it pleased the Lord to be born and to assume the human on our earth and not on another. The primary reason is because of the word, and in that it might be written on our earth. And when written, be afterwards published throughout the whole earth. And when once published, be preserved to all posterity, and that thus it might be made manifest, even to all in the other life, that God became man. Because of our writing, because of our publication abilities, because of our ability to share it throughout the whole world, it forms a foundation for all of the heavens. Everyone in every heaven from every earth can know about that the Lord came because we wrote it down. It's a pretty cool technology we have. Much better than this thing, right? All right, accounts of the spiritual world. After that, I heard a hostile murmur from people below, and at the same time a cry, "Do miracles and we will believe." In response, I asked whether these revelations were not miracles. Aren't these miracles? And they received the reply, "They are not." And then we skip a bunch of the passage, and it says, "But at that I then heard this declaration to them from heaven. If you do not believe Moses and the prophets, which is to say the word of the Lord, you will not believe as a result of miracles any more than the children of Jacob did in the wilderness. Neither any more than those others believed when they saw him with their own eyes, the miracles of the Lord himself performed when he was in the world. These books we have are miracles. They are revelations. The accounts of the spiritual world are there as a place for miracles. We can know what that heaven is like and what people talk like and what they're like up there. That's a miracle. And we get access to all of that." And this is a little sampling from how heaven sees this miracle. "When my interior sight was first opened, and through my eyes, spirits and angels saw the world and the things that are in it, they were so amazed that they called it the miracle of miracles." The connection between people and heaven. The miracle of miracles. "And they were affected with a new joy, in that in this way communication was opened of earth and of heaven with earth. This delight lasted for months, but afterwards it became familiar, and now they do not wonder at it at all. These things have been shown that man was so created that while living on the earth among men, he might at the same time also live in heaven among angels and the converse, so that heaven and earth might be together and might act as one, and that men might know what is going on in the heaven and angels what in the world. And therefore, that when men depart in this life, they would pass from the Lord's kingdom on earth into the Lord's kingdom in the heavens. And not as into another kingdom, but as into the same as that in which they had been when living in the body. But consequence of man's becoming so corporeal or bodily, he has closed heaven against himself." And this I think is kind of like a tantalizing promise for the new church. That if we as an earthly community, not necessarily just this church, but the whole community of earth, work with the Lord's revelation, that this can be restored. That is a possibility, that the Lord could restore the connection with heaven and earth, and we could live in a sort of shared community with angels in the next life. That's a really cool possibility that the Lord is holding out there. And one of the things I wanted to point out about the last section, I forgot, but, you know, as Moses and the prophets, this stuff isn't actually any harder to believe than this stuff. You know, what God revealed himself, and he came to earth, and there was a man walking on earth who's God, and plenty of people believe that. There was a man who went up to heaven and came back and told us what's there. It's not any crazier. It's not any harder to believe. It's the same stuff. God revealed himself. He's told us stuff that we wouldn't know about without him telling us about it. So that's the WAD from 734. But wait, there's more. In case I haven't bored you to death yet. He goes through and tells him all the stuff that's new about the new world, new heaven. And then if you read the premier reading material, there's a section about how sad he is that people don't seem to want to have this stuff. But then he goes on and said, I afterwards spoke again with angels, saying that something else has been revealed in the world by the Lord. When they asked what it was, I said, respecting truly married love and its heavenly delights. Who does not know, the angel said, that the delights of conjugal love surpass the delights of all other loves? And who cannot see that into some love has been gathered all the blessings, felicities, and delights that could ever be conferred by the Lord? And that their receptacle is truly conjugal love, which is able to receive and perceive them to a full sensation of them. I replied that they did not know this, because they did not go to the Lord and live according to his commandments, refraining from evils and sins and doing good. For truly conjugal love, with its delights, comes solely from the Lord and is given to those who live according to his commandments. Thus, it is given to those who are received into the Lord's new church. As I said, the church that is meant by the book of Revelation, by the New Jerusalem. Truly married love is a gift to those who come into his new church, who understand his word like the angels and are conjoined to him, who find him continually present in his word, who understand the relationship of their soul and their body and the next world, and who develop an angelic character and live according to his commandments and know what the Lord teaches and know about that last judgment which took place, who go to the Lord Jesus Christ. Do what he says. For those people, the most delightful thing that you can possibly have in this earth and in the next life, it's a free gift. He gives it to you. That's what the new church is about. That's what he's offering. The best thing he could ever give to you. It's a free gift. You come in, understand these things, live them, and join with him. So that's my WAD. We got through it in time. Thank you very much. If you have any questions or thoughts about this whole dump that I've given you, I hope it's made your heartbeat a little faster. It certainly did mine as I was preparing this.
Well, I was quickly reading through the preparatory readings, and this is not the preparatory reading, so do you have this list of numbers?
Yes, I sent out the wrong numbers. If you talk to my congregation, I am perpetually making those kind of errors, and they're kind of frustrated with me at times. There was a second number that was sent out. It's 532, 533, 534, that's the bulk of those passages. Sure. Back. They are on the handout, that list. So you will be able to walk away with it. But I didn't cite the passages. There it is. 532. So it's three numbers from Married Love. 532, 533, 534, and then 535, the one following it, which I didn't assign, is the one about how, you know, if you don't believe in Moses and the prophets, you won't believe miracles.
And there was DLW, Earth and the Universe, and TCR also mentioned in there.
The Last Judgment. A lot of my passages came from Last Judgment. If you haven't read that book, there's a lot of the whys explained in that book.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely
of stuff he knew about science when he came across divine love and wisdom.
Yeah.
It was like, this
yeah.
This answers all the stuff that the people in his realm wrestled with and couldn't answer. He
yep. Like, it's here.
Yeah. So for him, that was the hook that sold him on.
Yeah. And if you want to learn about the spiritual side, DLW is your book, Divine Love and Wisdom.
I just recently read a passage about the Lord providing different religions to bring his people to him. And because I always was confused as to why he would have these false ones that persuade so many people.
Right.
The ones that all ones that bought the hook, line, and sinker, the Athanasian Creed, and
yep. Mm-hmm.
And the people like the fellow you're talking about who find DLW and don't go, this is crazy that somebody says they went to the other world. It is hard to share these amazing things which speak for themselves, and they're what convince.
Right.
If people get turned off by the process.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and it's one of the things it talked about is, you know, people aren't into this because they're corporeal or bodily. And a lot of the other revelations are making accommodations to that. That being just interested in the physicality of this world and only interested in things that their senses can perceive. And so he's made accommodations in these other faiths. But if you want the good stuff, if you're able to let go of that and transcend your bodily senses and your attachment to those things, there's more to be had. And I think that's my case for what the new church is really offering, is an ability to transcend that attachment to the purely physical.
I think some of that attachment, though, is deeply psychological. For example, if you go back to the business about Abraham almost sacrificing Isaac, and the fact that human sacrifice is practiced for many cultures for many years, and even when you think about the Lord coming on earth, the standard Christian doctrine is he came to be sacrificed for our sins.
Right.
And I just think somehow those things are deeply inside our psyches for whatever reason.
Right.
And what you're really talking about with the new church is kind of a reality check, that this is the way it really is, even if it bothers your mind to do it, you know?
Right. Yeah, and in terms of that sacrifice, I think what he couldn't tell people yet, and that's that little passage from John 16, I think, was also in the pre-readings, where it talks about, there are many things I have to tell you, but you can't bear them yet. And I think people's idea of sacrifice, if they're bodily minded, is a bodily sacrifice, and not a spiritual sacrifice. That what the Lord went through was constant attacks from the hells in his psyche, and in his mind, and in his spirit, at those deeper levels, in association with the spiritual world, while he was present in the physical world. And how many things that we talk about that depend on these ideas to even get that? The relationship of the spiritual and the natural, and the relationship of the spirit with the body, and all these other things that are really part of understanding what the sacrifice of the Lord really was, requires some of these things to really get. And so I think as much as bodily mindedness is just all on this one level, that's what people were missing and didn't have the educational tools to even get yet. And I think we're at a stage in the world where people can conceptually grasp what the Lord is talking about. And so that's why the revelation came when it did. Yes, sir, you had your hand up. Right. Yep.
But you didn't mention the ones that are really, I think, a stumbling block.
Yep.
The people on the
Yep. Right. Yep. So he just mentioned that what we talked about was the cool stuff about Earth and the universe, not the challenging parts of it. And yes, that's true. And my goal for this presentation is to whet your appetites, to build a little affection of truth so you want to learn about it, and delve into it, and you know, wrestle with those challenges and come to some terms with it. That's another presentation and a task for all of you if you're called to that.
Sometimes I think about understanding the last judgment having taken place in the spiritual world. It really helps us make sense of what's happening in this world now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The relationship of what happens in the spiritual world and what happens in this world is, you know, something to enjoy thinking about and come to terms with and help us understand what's happening in this world.
Can you take one more question?
One more question.
Two
more questions. All right, two more questions and we're done. Calvin first. I was going to skip Calvin if we only got one more because he already talked.
I just want to say something about this, the conjugal love, this free gift. I've never worked so hard in my life for a free gift.
No, you're working hard to get into the new church. The conjugal love is the free gift.
And the other thing is that this whole thing, this is a very beautiful presentation. Thank you so much for that. That this whole thing is such a mind-opening experience. It just has to take us from our tiny little vision that we have of ourselves and our world, and then grow it and grow it and grow it so that it expands into the heaven, that there's earth and the universe, that the Lord is so big, he can manage it. So it's just a wonderful experience to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Thanks for doing it.
You're welcome.
Just on a really practical bent, having conversations with people who are new to the new church and the light of excitement in their eyes because the Lord, through influx, can give people a lot of this if they're open to it and reading the word and trying.
Right.
But it's so much easier if you're told some of this from the beginning, and then people who have struggled to come to this, and then they come to the church and they go, wow, it's
yes.
That it makes it easier. It makes the really hard work.
Right. Absolutely. So I don't know if you all heard, she's just affirming the delight and the joy of sharing these things with people who are open to them and their reception of them and the if they get these ideas earlier, when they come back to them again, it makes it a lot easier for them to accept them in faith and love. And sharing the delight of people with that. So, I have your discussion questions. On one side is what's new about the new church. One of the numbering systems, because I printed it as a double page thing and cut it in half, and one of the numbers repeated itself so that you get 1 through 8 on one page and 9 through 16 on the other page. I apologize for the numbering, and then discussion questions on the back.
So before we thank Derek, let me just really quick remind you of what's going on now. As soon as I dismiss you here in a second, if you have any kids for the next sections, you've got to go right away and relieve the people who've got the kids now. So if you're on for taking care of kids during the next section, please go do that. Other than that, as Derek said, he's got some discussion questions he's going to hand out. And the idea is just people can just drift. You can sit outside. It's not raining right now. Form a little...